Hi, everyone, and welcome to the RegTech Report, your update on all things RegTech.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the RegTech Report. Regular listeners will note that you have a different voice as your host. No Carl or Stefan today, just myself, Henry. But I'm really pleased to be joined by Peter and Mary. Peter, I think, is now a veteran three times on the RegTech Report. Mary, I think, first time. But maybe just before we start, Peter, maybe for those who aren't that regular listeners, maybe you could just quickly introduce yourself to everybody.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Henry. Thank you for the introduction. So I've been with MitroTech since May of 2021 when they acquired my company Contract Room. But more importantly, I've been in legal tech for nearly 30 years now, developed a few legal products, and have been working with GCs and compliance officers for that tenure, and have learned a lot. And we've been building solutions to kind of fit the times. And we're going to talk today a lot about, you know, contract lifecycle management, the impact on legal departments, the impact on compliance, and how the market is evolving. And that's why we've asked Mary to the podcast. Mary, why don't you go ahead and make your introduction as well?
Sure. Thanks, Peter. Hi, Mary Jabati. I'm a managing director at Moray Global. I joined Moray in July of 19. And like Peter, I've been in legal technology for over 30 plus years, and really have been focused on the corporate legal department. Spent a little bit of time in law firm, but most of it has been in corporate legal, helping legal operations directors and general counsels really use the technology more efficiently. And so we're really excited to talk to you about contract lifecycle management, which seems to be a hot topic over the last many years here and continues to draw lots of conversation. So thanks for having me.
Well, brilliant, Mary. Thank you very much for joining us. And as you say, the topic of conversation today is contract lifecycle management. I think I was reading a report somewhere, Legal Trends report from 2021, that said that legal teams today now spend only about 2.5 hours each day on billable work. So that's sort of from a productivity perspective, and it'd be great to draw on some of the experience there. But then I guess from a compliance perspective, you know, the contracts are there for a reason. You know, the inefficiencies in missing renewals, breach of contracts, suffering regulatory compliance issues, leaking confidential information. So there's kind of two angles to this. And I mean, I know from on the first one, on the efficiency, working with a number of clients in trying to negotiate contracts, how the counterparts on our side, we spent a lot of time trying to make sure that they understood what documents they had, where we last got to, and really just trying to help them focus on the legal work, not on the operational piece. So I guess it'd be really good to understand from both your Peter and Mary's perspective, you know, when is it time to start looking at a contract lifecycle management? When do we, what's the tipping point? I mean, Mary, maybe I'll come to you first. You said this is topical at the moment. When does that tipping point happen for an organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think it's twofold. One, if you're a very large sales organization or a sales focused organization, I think when sales is losing deals, or deals are lost in the cycle of a contract, or the CRO of an organization can't figure out where the contract is in the life cycle of the contract. So I think it really depends on, you know, the organization and the industry, but typically we really see it with, you know, there is ROI associated with contract management. And I think one of it is focused a lot on sales. One of it is focused a lot on, you know, gaining that efficiency. And I think you mentioned this earlier. So circling back to the billable work, I think one of the big things is we want to make those attorneys going back to doing the work that's important to them, high value work, and trying to get the low value work and making that, you know, more efficient using technology. So I think that's the key thing, and making sure we can get to that. And you could do that by, you know, making sure you have the good use of a contract management, you know, technology system. So I think that's, you know, circling back to your initial thought about 2.5 hours of billable work, that is key. And that is one thing that we're noticing a lot of. On top of, I think, legal and the sales team, we're seeing a lot of that working together in harmony, which we're calling a little bit. And we're seeing that they really have to focus together, because sales needs to generate revenue. Legal needs to make sure that they're applying the risk and associating the risk to the organization, but they both have a job to do. And so I think that between those two things, those are the two key things that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, that's great, Mary. I'll jump in here for a second, Henry. We approach this as a solution, not just a product. And the solution involves a lot of design as well as scope, and working with a collective, and that collective, not only on the customer side, multiple departments that get involved in the life cycles. So it's not just about scoping out how do we complete a transaction and the contractor documentation of that transaction. It also bleeds into very much the compliance and the audit, because there's SLAs, service level agreements, that are associated with every deal that most of our customers get involved in. So it's all about obligation management, being able to track that. Productivity is key, but also the compliance. And I know this is the RegTech report, so I'm going to make sure to speak to the audience. Everybody has to be aware that there is a set of practices that really work well to make sure that you're picking and choosing the right time, Henry, like you said, the right time with the right solution partners to get to the right solution. I'll also speak to a report that I read recently, Gartner being one of the leading research firms covering our industry, said recently that CLM, contract lifecycle management, is on the slope of enlightenment. I think that's partly true. I think that there's been some failed implementations that we will speak to throughout this podcast. And I want you to listen to it, because we'll touch on it at the end, because it is a complex and time consuming to get all this in place and do it right. And it's not just about the software. It's also about the content, the policies, the processes. And that's what Mary was touching on. So I think that we'll have to pay attention throughout this and really get into this a little deeper.
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, just taking a step back, as you say, we'll come to the what those projects look like and what and some of the pitfalls in getting this wrong. But I guess before we get there, I mean, Peter, you talked to we talked about you know, the legal team, 2.5 hours. We've got that whole compliance agenda, and because there's that compliance agenda, there's multiple people involved in putting a CLM program in place. It's not a solution, it's a program in place. So we've got multiple stakeholders across our organization. And in doing that, you know, it's not as easy as I always use the example. We're not just downloading an iPhone app and, hey, excellent, CLM isn't all now working. We've now got to build a business case internally with multiple stakeholders. So I guess, you know, to that point, I mean, you've talked to, you know, in terms of CLM, you're going to have finance people, IT people, HR people. There's multiple stakeholders in the organization that are going to are involved in negotiating those contracts and maintaining them. But therefore, to bring a solution in place, we've now got to bring all of those people together to get them aligned to be able to then build a business case to bring that in. Because it's not just the legal team bringing it in, or the procurement people, or the HR people who. Maybe we could talk to that. How do we start galvanizing people? Peter, maybe we'll start with you this time. How do we start galvanizing them to bring that solution and that change into our organization?
Absolutely. I want to start off with this, because I know that Mary's going to be able to dig into this a little deeper. But a common mistake is to pursue this legal technology without sufficient regard to the business or end user needs. It's a big time miss in a lot of business case development. You need to look at it as a holistic solution across your organization, not just one department. That is a critical thing. And I think Mary touched on that when she was talking about sales and procurement and legal and finance. They all go together. So that, you know, you need to look at how, you know, you can operationalize the whole organization across the contract lifecycle. And you're going to look at business outcomes that can, you know, really improve the overall efficiency and effectiveness of your contracting, and also lead into, you know, being more compliant with that operation. Yeah, so I think that a lot of many times GCs and their counterparts will, you know, not look at the entire landscape of the tech stack and how that overlays and builds a really efficient operation. It's important to really do this not only in a way that that builds the right solution, but the timing of the solution. How do you roll it out? How do you do it in stages to have that return on investment that you can show internally to all of your major stakeholders? That's another miss that we see, is when you have that big bang approach and you don't really scale it properly to the organization over time. And you're looking at, you know, in some cases, 2 years to get something implemented. That's unacceptable. You have to get ROI really quickly. So I'm going to turn it over to Mary, because I know she has some really good best practices on how to get that done.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. One thing I would say that I just want to touch upon, one thing that we're seeing in the market, and it really goes to this conversation about ROI, is that what we're seeing with some of our larger clients is that they are really taking a step back to say, okay, what is it really going to take? Like Peter was saying, it's not just the technology, but what is it really going to take to implement this solution, not just the tool? And so in order to do that, they need to really look across the organization. And so we have had, and we've been involved a lot of, in a number of conversations recently, actually, of helping clients kind of get that ROI conversation across the finish line, which I think is interesting, because 2 years ago, people were just buying and buying and buying. And I think now what we're seeing is they're like just taking a little bit of slower approach, which I think is actually great for I think it's great for the industry. I think it's going to be great for implementations. They will have more successful implementations. So I think that is a key thing, and we see that a lot in the market. So I wanted to make that comment. But circling back on the ROI conversation, you know, we really focus on getting everybody involved, like Peter was saying, making sure that you are talking, you know, legal has a seat at the table. You're talking with sales and procurement and everything, but also understanding that there's a number of things that carries that ROI across the organization. It's, yes, it's efficiency for attorneys. Yes, it can be procurement. It's about audit rules, right? You can also, you know, simplify your end users. You can also, you know, have that one place to look. It's about visibility across your practice and your overall, department. It's about reporting capabilities. It's about back to compliance, how can you ensure consistent legal security and privacy and compliance and security workflows across the all the departments? And so we look at the ROI across all of those things and really help, you know, and align that with the licensing cost. And so you'll see that it kind of, you look about, you know, how long it's taking folks to do things today. And then we look at, you know, the percentage of that. And then there's a little bit of an industry standard of the average is of ROI. And it really depends based on how big the organization is. But we really have noticed that in doing that, our clients have been able to get the budgets across the board for these solutions and get the right amount that it's really going to take. And it's not going to take 2 years to do these things anymore, like Peter said.
Yeah, I mean, Mary, just picking up one of the points you said earlier. I mean, you said there's been a change in approach. So previously, you said people just diving in and taking the technology, now taking. Is there a reason? Is there any reason for the change in approach that you see? And second part of the question is, are there any specific drivers now why people are looking at CLM solutions? So just whether you can talk to those two points, and maybe Peter, if you can as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first one is true. I mean, it is really the economy. I think people are really just watching every report I've read is really the technology cost is, they're watching their spend. Not just meaning outside council spend, but they're watching their spend overall within the department. And so that's key. And so they're really making sure that they, you know, they have all their information before they're going out to purchase these, you know, these technologies. And then I think the second part is really, I think people are doing what we found huge, and lots of people are talking about this. So our listeners are not going to be surprised, but this thing, which we're calling CLM readiness, is that we're actually helping, and Peter and I talked about this before, is that we're helping clients get ready for their implementations and doing a lot of the work up front for, you know, a significant lower cost to then they're ready for what it's going to take. So I think the economy is first and foremost. I think really they're really concerned about what's going on and how they need to look across the board. And then secondly, they're really taking an approach of, well, maybe I should assess where I'm at. For a lower cost, I could do that and then really understand what it is I need, and I can be ready for my CLM system. So we have seen that across the board. And I think that, and I would say a third thing, and Peter mentioned this earlier, there's been a lot of failed implementations. And I think that is absolutely, in this market that Peter and I serve, it's probably one of the topics that we address a lot, where we get calls and said, you know, we really don't want to rip out the technology, but can you help us fix it? And that's a lot of business process work we do. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess that leads us nicely into the last bit of segment we talked about earlier, which is, you know, how do we get a successful implementation? What are, you know, you guys have done this many times. You've seen good, you've seen bad. and let's not dress it up. There's always bad implementations. But I mean, in terms of when you're embarking on, you know, we won hearts and we know there's a problem. We've won hearts and minds. What are the sort of your top tips for someone embarking on a CLM project? To ensure that success? I mean, Peter, maybe I'll come to you first. You know, what are the sort of things you like to see from the client side to make sure that we know that, you know, it's a joint success? There's no point in just us selling them software. We've got to make sure they're ready. So what are we looking for from their side?
Right. And I will absolutely not steal Mary's thunder on this, because this is a big part of what she does. She ensures successful implementations, because a lot of times, and it, maybe it's due to not only, you know, what's happened in previous implementations where customers are now looking at replacing because they really do want that true ROI. There's tighter controls now because of the market. You know, if you think back to the pandemic, everybody was looking at their contracts and were concerned about, hey, what's the force majeure clause? You know, how can we look that up quickly? And they couldn't find that. Now it's like the whole transaction. How do we know our obligations across the board? And how do we get a system in place, but not a system, but a solution that can track that effectively? I think one of the issues that we've seen is that, first of all, we're a software vendor. So I love coming to a customer or a prospect, you know, with a partner that they can trust to give them, you know, the facts on not just the software, but also on their design of their processes and the people involved in that. How broad and horizontal can this solution be deployed? I think that's critical, is having that partner that can come to bear, that can help us with that. And I know for a fact that Mary has a list of really important best practices. And I urge you to listen up, because these things can really define whether you're going to be successful or not. But I do want to go back to what Mary said. The ROI to us is one of the guiding principles. We need to get ROI in the hands of our legal partners with our customers, so that they can go around internally and show that ROI very, very quickly to all of the key stakeholders, because we really want our legal department, our general counsel partners to be our champions. And we want them to keep that political capital that they've been building up over the last few years so that they can continue to evolve and grow this solution across their organization. So I'll turn it over to Mary, because Mary, I know you have some great ideas.
Thanks, Peter. I think first and foremost, it's experience and lessons learned. So that's number one, I would say. But I think one of the things that we try to do is that we really, besides the readiness and getting clients ready, is that our proposed approach is really twofold. One, it is definitely has a managed approach around it, but we also have a big change management approach that we weave into our implementation methodology in the way we implement contract management solutions. So, and everybody will say that. And I think one of the things that we definitely see is that we focus on upfront what is the project vision of what the client wants to do upfront, and making sure that you have commitment, from top down. And yes, people say that all the time, but it is truly important. And then making sure that you really have that communication, flow all the way across. So those are a couple key things up front. One, experience and lessons learned, and not be afraid to talk to clients about, experiences that you had that were not all that great, because I think that's what they want to hear. They want to understand that not everything's going to be perfect through their project, because it can't be. There's going to be bumps in the road. And so, but the key thing is that clients want to know, can you handle it? And do you have what it takes to really stick with them through the whole process? And I think that's where, having those capabilities across the board. So we focus a lot upfront on that. The second thing is that we have really pulled all the business process work around contracts. So anything around looking at the workflows and looking at all the templates and the harmonization, we've really married that with all of our strategic advisory work that we do. And so that means that we have a lot of really great people that are doing that work across the board. So having that up front is really important, and letting the technical people focus on what they're good at, which is the technical capabilities of implementing the solution, but having the people up front focus on what they're really good at is making sure that they understand documenting the, the workflows and the business process. And I think for so long, we tried to have the same people do this, the tasks all across the board. But what I've learned after many years of doing this is that it doesn't have to be the same people. It actually needs to be different people because of the skill set. And we have found, and it clearly has shown in our implementations, is that that makes the implementations way more successful. So from that perspective, that's really what we go in with. And, is it rocket science? No, it's not. But I think what we really just believe in is that you really have to find the right team to do the right work. It's similar to how we tell our attorneys, making sure they're doing the right work, do the right levels are doing the right work, right? So we're kind of saying the same thing through our implementations. And then really, really having the change readiness around the readiness of the implementation. So those are, those are key things. And I'm sure, Peter, I have missed something, but
I love this. I love this because also not only do you have those thoughts and ideas and practices to share. You also have the documentation that goes with it to help guide your stakeholders through it with design docs, with readiness docs. So it's really critical to have all that done up front to get that harmonization, get everybody on the same page. There's one word that jumps out that I always like to share, and this is true not only of CLM solutions, but any software product, and it's expectation management. It's really guiding and making sure that you have a good understanding of the expectations across the stakeholders. In the case of CLM, there's not one audience. There's many users across the organization. Every department's going to have a different set of requirements, but also expectations. So it's critical to manage those, and having a partner approach that like we do at MetroTech, when we go out to market and deploy through partners with partners, it's important to engage and make sure that everybody's on the same page. Alignment is critical, but true software, but in the case of CLM, even more pronounced. Henry. Yeah.
No, Peter, Mary. No, it's been a very interesting discussion. As I say, as a novice to this, I understand the need for technology to help us align all those teams and as you say, having the right partner to do that. And with that in place, it just makes that compliance agenda so much easier. As you say, the pandemic, you know, what are my force majeure clauses I've got everywhere? You know, what are my limitations, liabilities I've got across all my contracts, which are outside of my standards? Really difficult to do without having a solution in place. And from bitter experience, had to go through a manual process of going through all of our contracts to look for such a thing. And it would have been great if we'd had a CLM solution in place. As is standard, and Mary, this is sort of new for you. If you're not regular, listen, we try to end on a light note. So we kind of do a top three. So I thought we'd today.
Wait. You're saying that wasn't light talking about contracts. I thought we were super light.
It's the
top three.
Indeed, but just something for others to listen to. We finished with the top three with spring fast approaching. I thought, given most of us are well traveled. So where is your between the three of us, one each. Where is the place you most enjoy spending spring? With spring fast approaching, Peter. Okay. Maybe I'll come to you first.
I'll jump into it. Yeah. So there's a couple places in the United States that are near and dear when it comes to spring. One is a place in San Diego County called Borrego Springs, and it's actually part of the largest park in all of California. It's desert blooms. And they have this thing called Super Bloom that happens every so often. And right now it's going into effect in this part of the desert. What they call desert gold and sand verbena blooms are all over the valley floor. So go check it out. The other one is I lived for many years in Washington, D.C., and you cannot avoid the beauty of the cherry blossoms in the spring. On the mall, it is outstanding. One of the things I didn't know, which I was just doing some research when I was thinking about the top three and the cherry blossoms came right up to the fore, was that there is an quote unquote indicator tree on the mall in the tidal basin, which blooms 7 to 10 days before all the other cherry blossoms, and they call it the indicator tree. I think that's really cool. The final thing is skiing in Winter Park, not only because my brother lives there and I go skiing with him every year, but you are guaranteed in Winter Park, Colorado, snow at this time of year, late in April. And the reason being is because it's on the north side of the Continental Divide, and they only have 17 frost-free days a year. So you can ski. It'll be cold. That's it. Number one, cherry blossoms. Can't avoid it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Mary, to you. Try and top that.
Well, I don't think I can. Well, considering I'm a
you know, born and raised in the Chicagoland area. If you can't tell by Peter makes, he does not make fun of my accent, but I don't know. Sometimes I get New York, sometimes I get Chicago, or sometimes I just get, wow. No, I, you know, honestly, because I'm always in such a, I'm always all over the place. If we ever did have a great spring, I would, in Chicago, it would be the place to enjoy it. And there's an area here, in Lake, that's called Lake Geneva, where we go for to play some golf and to enjoy just kind of getting away. It's about an hour and a half outside of, you know, outside the city, which we love to go to. So I would say that, but I got to be honest with you, I'm a hot, hot weather type of gal. So I enjoy the heat. So maybe next time we'll talk about that.
Fantastic. And I guess just finishing that off, yeah, this time of year, the sun, as I live in London, so the sunrises in the morning are absolutely unbelievable. Although there is an expression, red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning. There's an awful lot of shepherd's warning around. It is absolutely beautiful. That with your blossom and some of the crocuses coming through is fantastic. But given it's this time of year, I'm with you, Peter. It's the skiing. There's nothing better than being the first person at the top of a run and the spring day and being the first person down that new powder. But Mary, I'm with you because at lunchtime the sun's out, it gets warmer. That beer tastes very nice on the slope. But Peter, Mary, thank you so much for joining us today. Hopefully everybody took some insight on CLM. I certainly did. And until next time, thank you very much indeed.
As always, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for listening. Let's continue the conversation on Twitter. Follow our dedicated podcast handle @TheRegTechRep.